You're listening to Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. In April 2014, the fateful decision was made to change Flint's drinking water source to the Flint River. That led to what is known worldwide as the Flint water crisis. But it took activist citizens like Leanne Walters working with Virginia Tech engineer Mark Edwards to rip apart layers of denial and stonewalling from local, state, and EPA officials. In 2001, Mark Edwards proved that people in Washington, D.C. were drinking lead-poisoned water after the city changed water treatment chemicals. So when Leanne Walters and other worried Flint residents called, he answered. I sat down with both of them recently on the one-year anniversary of the declaration of emergency in Flint. Like so many in the city, Walters and her family began having health problems just mere weeks after the water switch. Hair and eyelashes falling out, rashes. Her little boy suffered abdominal pain, nausea, headaches. And by December 2014, the family's tap water was brown. Yet the city kept telling them the problem was specific to their house. And then Leanne Walters had an epiphany.
It wasn't until we went into the meeting January 21st of 2015 where we got to see other residents holding up bottles of discolored water and bags of hair and showing off their rashes like we had in our home. Then it was like, okay, there's a bigger picture here. What is going on? Because then we knew it wasn't specific to our home. And the way they set that meeting up, it was set up to be utter chaos. So to really not answer any of our questions or address any issues, it was set up to get the residents to be emotional so they could shut the meeting down.
And what was it that gave you the idea to look outside and look to Virginia Tech and Professor Mark Edwards?
Well, that came later in this. It was after my son was diagnosed with lead poisoning. I started doing what I do. I started researching everything I could on lead in water, lead poisoned children, and the only name I could find was Dr. Mark Edwards from Virginia Tech. And so at this point, I was working with Miguel Del Toro from the EPA, and I had mentioned to him that I had found Mark's information online and that I was going to reach out to try to reach out to him and see if there was something he could do to help because of what he had uncovered in D.C., and that's when I was told that Mark was actually doing the independent testing for my home. And so he was aware of what was going on. And so I called Mark, and we've been working together ever since.
So, Mark, you had already been kind of pulled into this. Was it through Miguel Del Toro? We've all heard about this. It's so iconic. But in a sense, the roots of how you became involved maybe aren't so clear.
Most of the hard scientific work was actually done before I even arrived on the scene. I had helped Leanne sampled her house, and Miguel had taken that information and put it into the EPA report. And we labored quite mightily to make it so that EPA would be the hero and do their job and actually enforce federal law in Flint. So when Miguel put his job on the line and wrote the memo, and it was incredibly covered up, and then we heard that the state, unfortunately, was bragging to Flint residents that no one would help them and that Miguel had been taken care of, he was, quote, handled, that's when we really got mobilized. So that was the situation. We were quite angry that EPA wouldn't do their job.
What were your feelings when you tested the water from Leanne's house and I found, am I right, lead concentrations is more than 1,000 times the acceptable level?
Well, you know, the data arrived nearly midnight in early May, and I would have fallen out of my chair, except I was in the easy chair, and we called the technician immediately, and actually I called Miguel, who turned out called Leanne, and none of us slept that night because we thought, you know, maybe there's a mistake. But the next day we re-ran it. It was not a mistake. And so we had probably the worst case of sustained elevated lead in water I'd ever encountered. And then obviously Miguel took that data and sounded the alarm within EPA and wrote that memo that was leaked to the press. And it actually came out on Michigan radio after ACLU Michigan did the great work, Kurt Guyette, exposing it.
And when you got that call and told, it really confirmed for you what was going on, how did you feel then?
I was a little bit in shock. I mean, I would like to say it was complete shock, but after getting the original test results we got back from the city, when they were testing with loopholes at 104 and 397, it was like, okay, you know, how much worse can it get? And then we got to see how much worse it got.
Mark, how would you sum up the response, the pattern of response from officials in Flint and in Lansing and from the APA as you were trying to press this alarm?
Well, classic bureaucratic arrogance. It was them each reinforcing each other. The city, state, and EPA were all horrible, and together they were beyond that. But, you know, I must say, since we showed that it was a system-wide problem with our sampling, was led by Flint residents, and then Dr. Mona found the elevated blood lead, that it's been the exact opposite in general. I think the city, state, and EPA have done a fantastic job. And, you know, literally since October, the primary health threat has been eliminated, both in the context of lead and Legionella, by providing filters and bottled water.
And we've seen, you know, this story play out. And how did the pattern in Flint compare to what you went through in D.C.?
Well, D.C. was horrible because they got away with it completely. There was no one to question them. And even when I started realizing that they had told a horrific lie to cover up the harm and give themselves rewards and keep their jobs so that another D.C., which happened in Flint, was inevitable, the entire public health community worked against me. I mean, it's not easy to call out the CDC. You know, there are four government agencies I had to fight essentially alone for 5 years, and then I had a few D.C. colleagues helping me after that. But to get a congressional hearing and then essentially these agencies laughed in the face of Congress and would not reform, would not admit responsibility. So this was in 2010, and we just knew that it was going to happen again. It was just inevitable. And unfortunately, or I guess fortunately, actually, they messed with the wrong city. They messed with the wrong people. The Flint residents were going to take this. I mean, the entire country, if you've been watching the story, owes Flint a debt of gratitude. On today, front page, USA Today, is yet another expose of lead problems in rural America. We've already seen problems in schools all around the country. Mm-hmm. Literally every rock we've turned over in major cities has found high lead in water. And this is what we've been screaming about for 10 years. And frankly, no one would have cared had not Flint residents and this critical mass of moral courage, you know, exposed this problem and gave it national, international prominence.
So in a sense, Leanne, you and the other activist residents in Flint have kind of taught the country a lesson on how to approach this and what to do when you're told something by officials.
Yep. Follow your gut. Don't back down.
And I guess I'm interested, as we talk tonight, 1 year anniversary of this official declaration of the emergency, how would you describe the level of trust people have toward statements and actions by the government?
They don't. There's no trust there at all. None of that trust has been won back. We started making some leeway with EPA after I led the second round of Virginia Tech testing. And then we had the congressional hearings where Gina McCarthy went on the stand and blatantly lied about EPA's responsibility in this.
That experience, what was that like for you, both of you? I'll start with you, Leanne, to be there seeing this play out on the national stage at the Capitol in front of that Congress?
I was enraged. I was furious. Me and Mark just kept looking at each other like, are you kidding me? Like, I was told that my facial expressions was the lie detector of the hearing. I did not get a chance to talk to Susan Hedman when she was up there. I did, however, make my way to Gina McCarthy and tell her she was a liar to her face.
And how did she respond?
She told me no, she wasn't. And I said, yeah, you were. You lied. The minute you knew they were breaking a federal law, you knew it was the whole city, and you lied. I'm not saying EPA is responsible for all of this, but they do bear some responsibility, and they need to accept that.
And they also created a climate in which this was allowed to occur not only in Michigan, but all around the country, as we've seen.
And as we know that, you know, coming up next month, January 10th, there's a meeting, EPA meeting in Chicago, that could result in a declaration that the lead levels in Flint water are now under the federal limits spelled out in the Safe Drinking Water Act. Where do you stand on that?
Well, you know, Flint's water is actually probably as good or better than most other urban cities around the country at this point, especially if you consider the fact that they're still going to be providing lead filters, which I think we're going to see in other cities. That's one of the things we learned from Flint, is that probably never again in this country will we be able to say that water from a lead pipe is safe. That's one of the things that you're seeing in Milwaukee, other cities, they're starting to recognize it. It's not. So you know, I feel that everyone is really operating on an abundance of caution here. They probably could have said it was okay some months ago, but the bar is set very high because it was set so low for too long. And so Flint is going to be, you know, example, hopefully a good example of how to do corrosion control right in the future and protect the population from elevated lead in water.
I'd like to talk with both of you a little about what this entire battle has meant for you personally and professionally. And I know, Leanne, you and your family moved to Virginia. Your husband's in the Navy. And he's filed a complaint saying that he's being targeted by senior officers because of your activism and your visibility.
Well, I need to correct you on that.
Okay.
We were restationed to Virginia. Mm-hmm. I live there part-time. I split my time in half for the last 15 months. I live 2 weeks in Flint, 2 weeks in Virginia. When his contract is done, they move us back to our home of record, which will be Michigan. I've worked very hard to squash the I live in Virginia because I don't.
Fair dues.
I travel and have been and do this every month. So,
And what's going on with him with the job?
After I testified before Congress, things started to get a little tense at work. And then after we did the second round of Virginia Tech testing and the state Senate hearing, things got really bad. And when I tested our military housing, I tried to go through the proper channels in the military housing to have them test my water, and they wouldn't. So I did an independent test, and when our test came back over the action level in our military housing, that's when they threatened to put my husband in a psych ward, saying that he was too damaged from Flint if he didn't get me under control. As a military wife, my job is not to be a crusader. It is supposed to be to support him and the military. They feel that what we're doing is demeaning to the federal government, and so they do not support it. And I'm not saying that's all military. I'm saying it's the chain of command he's with right now. When we were stationed here in Michigan and he was stationed at Saginaw, they were 100% supportive of what we were doing.
So what next for him?
Well, we wait for the investigations that are starting on the complaint. It was filed under whistleblower, so there's, you know, things that I cannot discuss because it hasn't been investigated. But, I mean, they've been putting us through hell since April. So, I mean, I'm glad that it's finally public, but it's been a horrible experience knowing that we've tried to do the right things in Flint to now, you know, be fighting for our livelihood because of standing up and doing what was right. I mean, it's not easy to watch them try and, you know, tear him apart and tear him down every day since April.
Quite a price. Mark, I've read pieces where you're described in very honorable, glowing terms. There was a piece by writer Steve Kolowich in the Journal of Higher Education calling you, quote, the hero scientist of Flint. And you quickly counter that by saying, quote, I'm a coward like 99% of the time. I think there are many in Flint who would disagree with that statement.
Well, you know, unfortunately, we live in a culture where people find it hard to speak out. They're afraid that they're going to lose their funding, they're going to lose their job. And I think that's the story of Flint, is that despite our current coward culture that we have, that folks did step up. Miguel, Leanne, ACLU Michigan, Dr. Mona, you know, it's really an amazing story. And for me, it's been, you know, the end of a 13-year journey, and I just think back on it and all the people I've met. And, you know, Leanne's like a baby sister to me, although she has the disposition of a grizzly bear. My students call her Mama Grizzly and do not mess with her, as the state found out. And, of course, Dr. Mona, you know, what can you say? She's incredible. And all the people I met on this journey, and I have to say, even EPA and the state and the city have been incredible ever since October. So, you know, I just think it's an amazing sort of success story. And as bad as what happened in Flint, as bad as it was, I shudder to think what would have happened had we not stepped in and got those kids out of harm's way. We exposed the Legionella problem, and we're now learning from this nationally. And just think of all of the harm that could be avoided if we learn from this mistake and never again allow it to occur in this country.
What has your activism and this high visibility in the fight in Washington, D.C. and in Flint for people there. What has it meant for your academic career?
Well, it's definitely a mixed bag. I mean, it's not a compliment to be termed an activist as a professor, and actually many colleagues have spoken out against me, against what I did, and said it's an example of what not to do because you're opening our community up to retaliation and that, you know, we might not get funding. But I then point out and look at the reality of what's happened. Schools in Michigan have gotten millions of dollars of research funding to help out with Flint. We've gotten billions of dollars of infrastructure money nationally. Flint to date has gotten almost $700 million. That's roughly $60,000 per child. So, yeah, unfortunately, while I personally still have debts from what we did, you know, it was priceless. We wouldn't trade it for anything. And I think that's the issue with the coward culture is that people are afraid, and if you actually do the right thing, it usually turns out for the best, and I think that's the case here.
Leanne, were you that mama grizzly bear before Flint, or did the Flint water experience turn you into mama grizzly bear?
I've always been a mama grizzly when it comes to my kids, maybe not to this magnitude, but it wasn't just about my kids. I mean, if it was, when the city offered me $1 million, I would have taken it. We would have walked away. It was about all the families and all the kids in Flint that were being exposed and being hurt. And our biggest thing is everybody thinks, you know, says, you know, you should feel so great and this is such a victory. And to me, it really isn't, because we tried to get this change to happen long before it did. And every time I hear a story of another child that was damaged in this, poisoned from this, it breaks my heart, because that was the whole reason why we wouldn't shut up and go away and we wouldn't take the money and go away. So to me, the fact that, you know, so many kids were hurt in the process as we were fighting to stop this, I wish it would have been different if they had acted sooner, if they'd have, you know, done the things that needed to be done when they should have been done, it would look much different. So that part isn't victorious to me.
That was Flint mother Leanne Walters.